It's 9 o'clock. We'll go ahead and call this Public Safety Committee meeting to order. As I said, it's February 3rd, 9 o'clock. All committee members are present. I acknowledge that the press and public have been duly notified of this meeting in accordance with FOIA. Next item on the agenda is approval of previous month's minutes of January 13th. There's a motion to approve those minutes.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're moving on to citizens' comments. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. Anybody's able to speak? Dr. Smiley?
No.
Oh, I thought you were getting up. Okay. We'll move on to old business. Update of the safety camera breach inlet. I know we're still working on that one.
I have a meeting today with Technology Solutions. We're going to meet on site.
Okay.
They're trying to push but they're recommending the use of a cell cellular phone data type system that we haven't had in the past. We want to check connectivity before we move forward with that. But we'll be out there today, and then once we do that, we'll get a hard deadline on when they'll move forward.
Perfect. Update on the purchase of the 75-foot ladder truck, 95-foot ladder truck.
So first of all, I want to make a correction from last month. I gave, we were texting
Correct.
Back and forth. So the 75-footer went from Ocala, Florida to New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost done. Our inspection trip is February 10th to the 12th, so we'll be up there next week, and it'll be a final inspection. And from there, it'll go to FES plant in Sumter to have all the little bracketry put on. It'll come to Isle of Palms, we'll do training, and it should be in service between the end of February and the beginning of March.
Okay.
And I actually have pictures. So but it's not finished, so we're missing some striping, but here's one of the pictures of the... So the striping's not done, and of course it's not all about the paint, but if you have to get it painted, you may as well. That's the front. It's real similar to our previous truck. I mean, we had such good luck with the E1. So. And then we made a choice. On the back of the truck, it's red, white, and blue to keep people from hitting it.
Nice.
Yep. So. Perfect.
So that one, we're going up. The contract calls for two people to be paid for by the company,
mm-hmm.
and then from a training standpoint, it's a very rare opportunity, so we'll be taking two extra people out of training budget to go up there with us. It's, like I said, just a very rare opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The 95-footer is in Florida, and it is on schedule to be ready for June, and that'll be another trip that we'll just drive down there and pick it up.
Okay. Perfect. And that one will go into service when it gets back as well? On the
yes, unless we have to redo bracketry.
Okay. Got it. Any questions for Chief? Perfect. I'm going to move on to our old business. Everybody's been handed their capital FY21 scheduled capital expenditures. Desiree, I don't know if you want to start off with this and kind of go over.
Yep. We'll go through the capital requests for FY21 for police and fire. We'll start with police department.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any questions, and you know, both chiefs will chime in as necessary. So we have two patrol sedans to be replaced with SUVs. These are two left that have not yet been replaced. They're on a 7-year rotation. Some of the vehicles in the past, we were on a 6-year rotation. We extended that to 7-year, and Chief and I have had conversations about some vehicles could be extended 8 years. So we take that on a as-needed basis. So two would be up for replacement this coming year. Also, the replacement for the beach services pickup truck from 2012. It's also that's on an 8-year rotation, so it wouldn't be up for replacement until in 8 years. The beach services utility for 4x4 ATV, Chief Cornett is requesting that we replace that rather than with a utility ATV with a regular ATV, so that it could also be used for patrolling and using on the beach. it would just be a matter of adding an attachment like a snowplow. Mm-hmm. That utility ATV was purchased initially to help fill holes on the mm-hmm. beach, and it was pretty much just used for that. So if we go with a regular ATV and have that attachment, it could okay. serve a dual purpose. So that's also up for replacement in FY 2021. Also, 12 ticket rider tablets for parking enforcement. They're outdated. They're you know, at the end of their useful life. So we would be looking at replacing those this coming year. The computer server is also up for replacement this year for $15,000, and replacement of the in-car cameras. Y'all recall last month, council approving a purchase for replacing some. It was not all. This would be the only two that would be required. The only ones that would be required, so that all of the vehicles have same equipment. And records management system, we currently have one system with Interpol, and Chief Cornett has requested that we replace it with a different provider. Chief, do you want to give some background on records management?
Interpol is, I'm definitely not knocking the company, but they're based out of up north out of a different state. And their system is very difficult to get reports for. I'm unable to give you a report today on our stats because it typically takes Tracy a day or two to work through our records management system to get that data for you so that you can get the reports. And the other issue is because it's out of state, they don't necessarily line up with our SkyBurst, which is our incident-based reporting that we have to do for SLED every month. So that becomes a much more difficult task. What we're looking at is hopefully a local company that would be able to work not only with law enforcement, but with the court system as well. So courts, RMS, and police would all be one records management. They could communicate with each other. Right now, the one that stands out the most is similar to what Sullivan's Island has. It's actually the exact same company that Sullivan's Island uses, which is based out of Florence. Mm-hmm. And so they're local and kind of understand what they were doing. And if we had a reporting system like that, I could have walked in this morning, clicked a couple buttons, and printed you a report, which is much easier than a daily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the $30,000 includes that first time purchase, basically, of the system, and then it would be a $4,000 annual maintenance or service fee. Okay.
Currently, we spend about $20,000 annually on Interpol. So that's where the big cut.
It'd be a big price differential, mm-hmm. I guess, the ongoing operational cost of that records management system. Okay, so that has been included in FY21. Also, you see there 50% of the public safety building repair. We split that between fire and police. And if you see the note there that this amount may change depending on the FY20 progress. As you all know, we're gearing up to start construction or mobilizing to start construction in next month in March. And this is a project that we're not borrowing for. We are scheduling the payments because between FY20 and FY21, depending on when the construction will take place. So we have some funds available this fiscal year, and then the remaining was going to be budgeted for FY21. So depending how much work happens between the end of this fiscal year, we'll know how much we have to budget. But the money, it's the same, you know, the money's in the budget. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of where do we, in what fiscal year do we put it, and when is it spent? Special projects here you can see are new initiative to budget funds for ongoing maintenance to address deferred maintenance. We are not including anything in FY21 because we're, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to be spending $6 million for repairing the building. But in the next fiscal year, you'll see that number included both for police and fire.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
Any questions for police? Okay. So we'll go through the fire department. We had scheduled the replacement of the pumper truck that was originally purchased in 2003. We are in the process of evaluating rather than replacing it, refurbishing it, very similar to the 95-foot ladder truck. So we'll see those numbers being refined as we go through the budget process. We have $25,000 here for vehicle radio replacement with failure only. We have $25,000 in FY20 as well. And Chief Graham is in the process of replacing some. So if those are replaced in this fiscal year, then that number, although it's with failure only, which is the placeholder for the budget, may be able to come down some. We have the replacement of the 2008 F-150. This is a truck that's used by the trainer and fire inspector. That is due to be replaced, and as well as the F-250 2008 Ford truck. This is the chief's truck, and chief, we continue to defer this every year. We might just include it here with failure only. If it starts giving us a lot of problem and you know, maintenance costs start piling up, then we may just replace. But I think Chief Graham is connected and attached to that truck and thinks that we can potentially defer it one more year.
Perfect.
We are currently evaluating the self-contained breathing apparatus mask fit testing machine. This could be deferred. The department is currently evaluating, you know, if there are any other alternatives to that. So we'll come back next meeting with some more information on that one. It's $10,000. We have the replacement of one personal watercraft for $14,000. The FY20 budget also includes the replacement of the other boat. Which will happen before the end of this fiscal year, and we would be replacing the boat on Fire Station 2 first, because it's the one in, I guess, worse shape. And those are replaced on a 3-year mm-hmm. rotation. You know, you can't really wait until those don't work. We use them a lot in the summer, so it's important that they're always in really good shape and able to be used when needed. We have the replacement of two ATVs for beach patrol and missions, also evaluating, including us only with failure. So that's also being looked at by the department. We have for $20,000, cutter, spreader, hose, and pump for Jaws of Life equipment. That's also being evaluated whether or not it could be deferred. We'll see refined numbers as we go along. We have the replacement of the 28 self-contained breathing apparatus. They've looked into the ones that we have, and Chief Graham believes that that could be deferred until FY22, that replacement. So that'll change. And you also see here 50% of the public safety building repair costs, which similar to what we discussed under the police department capital plan. Here you can see $49,000 for the maintenance contingency initiative that we have, and this would be for Fire Station 2.
Okay.
That's all I have. Chief Graham has something.
I would like to make a comment on the air packs.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, like I said, we feel comfortable moving them and deferring them, but we also hope that'll help take the sting out of refurbishing Engine 2, because Engine 2 mm-hmm. appears to be in good enough shape. Otherwise, we're looking at the difference between maybe $250,000 to $300,000 versus
$750,000. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Be interested seeing what is able to be deferred a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And then I appreciate you guys looking at that. Both departments. I mean, there was a time in the police department when we rotated cars every 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and just because we rotated cars, that's what we did, and that's the way we always did it, and realizing, you know, they do have some extended life to them,
mm-hmm.
and how to take care of them. Perfect, thank you. On to new business, we have discussion of implementation of paid parking on the designated beach parking zones. This is kind of interesting, because it's always been... The DOT has always kind of said that we couldn't do paid parking unless we had designated parking spots, had to be delineated, the shoulder had to be a certain way. They're starting to change their tune a little bit, and it's for the better for us, I believe. And this will, is something that we can move forward on. We had a meeting with DOT last week. And I think because a lot of the other beach communities are moving towards paid parking in their public rights-of-way, both Folly Beach and Sullivan's Island. I think it's something that the city will be able to move forward with soon, is my understanding. There's not a whole lot that we would have to do in order to make it happen. Desiree, I don't know if you want to expand on it some more. I'm sure you have some notes on it. But
yes. So like Chair Buchanan was saying, we had a meeting with SDOT last week, and the purpose of that meeting was to clarify and confirm SDOT's position for many years related to what the city would have to invest and implement in order to even think about moving towards a paid parking program on the island. For many years, they have indicated that the city would have to improve the road right-of-way. An improvement, either asphalt or concrete, or this grit-like material that we were looking at that would create a sort of a harder surface for the right-of-way. They also had said that the city, in order to charge for parking, that the spaces had to be delineated. So now they have changed their position. They recognize how frustrating that is for us, not in a bad way, but I've been hearing some chatter around other communities that was not consistent with the message that SDOT had been telling the island. So that's why we pursued and said, let's just sit down and clarify what this would mean. So we had a really productive meeting, and they said that as long as the road right-of-way was basically flush with the road, that it wasn't creating a tripping hazard between the road and either the sand or the surface, then that would be considered improved or hard surface. We wouldn't have to either asphalt it or install this grit-like material. And then also the definition for designating parking spaces no longer meant lining each individual parking space and identifying each individual parking space. That as long as the city installed signs designating this area as paid parking, which we currently already have, designating where the beach parking zones are, then that would meet the definition for designating the areas. What means for the city is the city would not have to entertain the significant investment in improving the road right of way. We have been improving the road right of way for years. You know, whenever it gets soft, we have a vendor that comes in and fills it with ROC and what's it called? Just flattens it and make sure that it's not creating a tripping hazard. So we've already been doing that consistently for many years. So it wouldn't be any different moving forward. There's always the concern about what happens when residents park on the right of way, because it is a paid parking zone. So one of the ways that other municipalities are addressing that is providing residents with a decal, a residential parking decal that would allow them to park in those areas. Currently, the city provides those decals at no cost. The city would have to potentially look into charging some sort of fee for residents to buy that annual decal, rather than the city providing it. And in that way, the city would be residents would be paying for parking in the road right away. Rather than having to pay for the hourly fee, they would have that decal, which they currently already have, and would not need to pay for the hourly fee like a day tripper would. So just wanted to clarify that, bring it up to the city and the public safety committee, because since SDOT has changed their position, I don't know if that changes council's position about pursuing paid parking on Palm. Anybody has any questions.
This is one of the things that I've talked about for years. I mean, the amount of resources that go into our summer seasons or go into this maintaining the beach or maintaining, public safety at the beach and personnel at the beach. There's no return on that for folks who come over and just park alongside the road, as well as the infrastructure along that road. We do have some drainage issues in there where we consistently have to put up signs when it rains, we get heavy rains. I think that's a way to help alleviate some of that burden of those costs of trying and solving those problems that we have right now. I don't know if you guys had any other suggestions on it. Or
well, Desiree, what your comment about residents paying, is that mm-hmm. a DOT requirement that there's some equality, I guess, mm-hmm. equality, I guess, around who pays and when and what?
Yes. Yes, more or less. Yeah. It's a little bit more complicated than that. And I don't, you know, we've had legal advice on the issue, and I can, you know, certainly get Julia here and provide legal advice during executive session, mm-hmm. but there is a requirement that, you know, there would be some expectation that residents would, you know, pay for the ability to park in those paid parking areas.
Right. And then what happens, if a resident's paying and then they have guests mm-hmm. that are paying, I mean, you don't want your guests to have to pay to park. I mean, is there passes, I guess, you could do in some way that...
Well, we already provide the visitor parking booklets mm-hmm. to those residents that live in the residential parking zone. The city last year made a decision to provide, rather than one 30 passes booklet, to two. So each resident can have two parking booklets. And those could be used more than one day. They could be reused. And I think that what the city could look into is expanding that to those residents that live along Palm and the other beach parking zones, which are mostly around the avenues that connect to Ocean Boulevard. Yeah. And that would be one alternative to solve for that, to provide those residents in the beach parking zone those same booklets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the city could also look into the dates and the times when parking is enforced. Ideally, the city would look into being consistent with the same hours as Front Beach. The hours can be tweaked, but currently, beach parking regulations are enforced between 9 and 6. And the reason why the city years ago went to 9 to 6 is to just recognize that sometimes folks have visitors in the evenings or gatherings, and those usually maybe start after 5, after 6. So to accommodate for that, I think the city did held off from doing a 24-hour parking enforcement. Also, most of the day visitors or our visitors come between the hours of 9 to 6, so there wasn't that much, you know, in terms of enforcement need. After 6, you know, that's the time where people are starting to head out. So those are all things that I think, you know, would be part of this conversation to see whether or not mm-hmm. it's doable for council.
And I'm assuming it's an app-based payment system somehow.
Correct.
And the chief would have admin rights or something to be able to see who's paid or not.
Right, and that's one of the things that we're still working on. We'd be able to use our system that we have.
Flowbird.
I want to call it Bluebird, but it's Flowbird. Bluebird's in Nashville. Flowbird system, basically. So it's not like you'd have kiosks. We just have to make sure people are aware of where they're at and be able to sign on and pay. And like I said, if it comes down to resident parking, paid parking, and I hate the idea of having multiple decals, mm-hmm. but I mean, you could... Like I said, you could have, if a resident really wanted to have a paid parking, we could have one separate from the city-issued parking decals that we give out mm-hmm. As well. And that's one of the things we still have to discuss. We still have to find a way for enforceability to work with the Flowbird system. Chief, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Flowbird has a lot of opportunities that I don't know that we're using to its fullest capability yet. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I'm undertaking with our new changeover for the livability sergeant and everything. We're going to dive into it and learn as much about it as possible. And by the time mm-hmm. this circles back around, I think we'll be able to have a much more intelligent conversation from my end on Flowbird.
And I know we just had a meeting with DOT last week, I know, Desiree, you're going to work with Debbie on what the potential revenues mm-hmm. source would be for this. And hopefully we'll have that soon as well.
Yeah, it would be an app-based. Sometimes some of the concerns that have been raised in the past is, you know, what happens with people who don't have a smartphone? I think maybe 98% of people nowadays have a smartphone. And the city already provides kiosks in the Front Beach area and the parking lot. So you are still providing those folks that may need to get a physical ticket. It wouldn't be very convenient if they're trying to park in 28th Avenue. Mm-hmm. They would have to go to, you know, Front Beach to get a ticket. But that could be just the offering. The city could still be, those folks that don't have a smartphone would still be able to go to a kiosk and get a ticket. And making it maybe not as convenient would push people from just using the app base, which it's just super simple to use. So yeah, there's a lot of questions. You know, we this was new again. You know, last week we had that meeting with SCDOT. I think it's going to generate some buzz because Sullivan's Island is looking at it pretty aggressively as well.
This upcoming season,
I'm not sure. I don't think that they've made a decision yet on terms of, in terms of timing. I do think that this, in order to do it right and communicate with the public, should council decide that, you know, you want to go through with it, then, you know, enough time to educate, you know, both residents and the public would be advisable. So we've talked about all of the requirements that SCDOT has been putting on the city for many years, and that has changed. So I felt, you know, a responsibility to make the committee aware of that.
Right, and I mean, just as early, I mean, our last month's meeting, we still had discussion about using the True Grid system, trying to find a way to move forward with a paid parking plan that fit the desires of SCDOT, and then, I mean, just from last month to this month, it's a totally different turn, so.
We may revisit parallel parking.
But that's good. It's exciting news. So, like I said, we'll keep this on the agenda, and while Folly Beach is already has some of this in place, kind of, but I could see all three beach communities kind of going online almost together with this.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So if I'm at 23rd and Hartnett, and I got a city sticker, do I have to get another sticker to park on Palm Boulevard, or what is the deal?
That's one of the things we were just talking about. So we would have to go through. There has to be, for equability, I guess, to make everything's fair amongst all, because everybody's a taxpayer of DOT roads. Residents would have to either buy a sticker if they wanted to park in that area, or for me, I never park on Palm Boulevard or utilize any of those side street or the parking meters, and I'm not sure how often those folks do. But the biggest concern would be the folks who live in that area, you know, who utilize Palm Boulevard as their parking spot, though.
I think you'll get some pushback on this. I was fine until I heard it. Residents are going to have to get a paid permit. I think you're going to get some pushback. People, as long as we've been talking about parking, but just in the past 8 years, it's always been a sticking point about we don't want to burden the residents with another, they perceive it would be another tax. I'm just saying, I see that down the road as being a problem. Even though it's a DOT requirement, it's going to be hard to translate that to the residents. Say, why am I paying another tax? If I never go to the front, if I go to Front Beach, I don't have to pay, unless I'm parking on the street, but in the lots, and I don't have to pay the parking right away in front of my house right now, and that won't change, but I mean, I have never parked on Palm Boulevard to go to the beach.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. I foresee it.
That's why we're putting this information out there.
Right.
I mean, that's why I offered out, you know, this suggestion of it, instead of having the one sticker, two stickers, if you want to choose.
It needs to be clearer, because it's going to be a lot of confusion from what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm. What would you suggest?
Well, we're kind of We got constraints from DOT, so I don't know that I have an answer at this point. This is the first time I'm hearing about it. You've mentioned it to me briefly out of a meeting one time, but I just have to study it more. Mm-hmm. But I'm always looking out for what the public is going to perceive it to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we want to stay out of their pocket as much as possible.
And I totally agree, and I think if whether I'm not going to speak for our residents, but for me, I mean, I would rather pay for a $20 parking pass and have my drainage infrastructure fixed and my right-of-ways maintained, and instead of now still have to pay for drainage infrastructure and tax them on the backside of it. I think something like this would be worth discussion, obviously, but you know, I'd like to see what our revenue source potential may be, and how it will offset, you know, some of the things we have coming down the line here.
Well, as Ray said, there's going to be a lot of questions.
Oh yeah,
and that's one of them.
And this is just the start.
We're just getting started. I don't see how it's possible to implement it this season.
Yeah, no. I would agree.
No.
I think people are getting a little weary of talking about parking. It seems like we're doing it every year, mm-hmm. you know. And some people I talk to are like, stop.
Right.
You know.
Right. And some aspects I agree. During the elections and during the past multiple elections, one of the biggest concerns that we got from the community is paid parking. And they wanted to see a revenue source for that to offset our costs that we are putting into it. And DOT's kind of loosened their reins a little bit to allow us to start doing that without having a big financial burden in order to implement it. And that's why I said we'll start on this path to see what it's going to take to do it. And put that question out to the residents, and hopefully they'll show up and voice their concerns if they have them. So, any other thing? Thank you.
I think that's it.
There's another one. Discussion and enforcements of encroachments of the right-of-way. And I've had some discussions, and I've always emailed you and Douglas and Chief and whenever I come across something like this. And I don't know if there's been a change in policy or a change in direction of how this is getting enforced, because I've always contacted you and Douglas and basically let people know when there's but now I start copying Chief as well. Now I'll copy all of you guys and make sure it all goes to the right people. Mm-hmm. What is the city's policy on this? And where does it, if somebody has a complaint or somebody has concerns about rights of way of encroachment or we come across it, mm-hmm. where does the enforcement begin on that?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to take a stab at it?
I'll
start. This is a long. This may be a long conversation, and hopefully a clear one, clear as mud, right? Sure. So the city has the police department has the authority, and the city has the authority to enforce encroachments on the right of way from SADOT. Most of our roads are state owned. Some of them are city owned, but we do have the authority to enforce encroachments on the right of way. For many years, I believe, the city's position has been to pursue voluntary compliance. We are made aware of an encroachment in the right-of-way. Either Douglas would go out, police department would go out, note that, hey, you shouldn't be putting that in the right-of-way. We either allow the resident to produce an encroachment permit from SADOT. If they don't have one, we allow them to go through the process to get an encroachment from SADOT or the city if it's a city-owned road. And pretty much that's where it stops, correct? I mean, if somebody doesn't comply or doesn't get an encroachment permit, the city does have the ability to issue citations, issue tickets between $5 and $20 a day for the encroachment. There is a question about whether or not the city has the authority to physically remove those encroachments because they're state-owned roads. But I don't think that we have any record of the city issuing a ticket or pursuing any encroachment in the right-of-way through civil court. This has been discussed in, for many, many years. You know, I went back and looked at discussions from 2004, where I think I attached it to the packet. A resolution was developed, and the city was really, you know, was pursuing real strongly addressing and removing encroachments in the right of way. A resolution was drafted, and ultimately, council decided not to pursue it. Douglas, were you here back then? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Douglas was here. Yes. He may be able to. this conversation came up again when the city was developing the beach managed parking plan, because the city wanted to know how many parking spaces do we have. And I've attached that list there that was produced by Stantec. That this was from, you know, at least five or six years ago. You can see the amount of encroachments, mostly vegetation, mostly trees and shrubs, palm trees, that were in the right of way, and the degree of difficulty in removing them. So I think that there is some people in the community have an expectation of the city enforcing these encroachments and either physically removing them or issuing a citation, but we need some guidance from council about what you all want the city to do, because once we go this route, it's something that we have to apply consistently across the board. And as you can see from that almost 10 or 12 page list, there are significant encroachments. A couple of years ago, the city decided, when Chief B was here, to go after new hard encroachments. So whenever we saw a hard encroachment come up, then the city would be require the property owner to either get an encroachment permit or remove them. And I think in a period of a year, the livability officer was successful in maybe addressing four or five. So it's hard and long and arduous process to get folks to voluntarily comply to removing encroachments in the right of way.
Okay, so,
yeah. I don't know, Douglas, do you have anything?
Just to go back to your original point of what's the process. My office, we are obviously involved with construction, new construction.
Right.
If we now, and we didn't for years, but we now get an encroachment permit where we are sure that every finished project has an encroachment permit, and we use the CO as kind of leverage to ensure that new construction doesn't put anything out there.
Right.
But we have legal opinions, and there's a state statute that basically requires a police officer to enforce on existing encroachments. So how this really has played out is I will go out there when it happens, and I will contact the owner, let them know, you know, you've got a problem. If they thumb their nose at me or, you know, it doesn't get dealt with, then my authority really ends at that point. I don't have the legal authority to push it beyond what I, you know, just tell them about it. So, that's kind of where it is.
And I know we had some time, we were doing that, you kind of held kind of the CO portion of it up if they had encroachments. But the problem was, once they got CO, then not falls on your, you know, in your department, you know, because right if they got CO, they'd go ahead and... So as opposed to, you know, we're looking for voluntary, you know, compliance, how do we just make compliance?
So the next step would be for the police department to issue tickets. And the state statute allows a municipal summons to be issued between $5 and $20 per day. Then the city could also pursue it through civil court if that person either refuses to comply. But that it would be a sort of a civil matter through court and the police department.
But one of the things I noticed is, and I'm not, if it's a new encroachments become permanent encroachments over time, just because, I mean, if our policy right now is really, it's not much we can do. And like I said, we've maybe had four people, you know, comply. But like I said, when I'm running, I'll take them, like the house at the end of 42nd Avenue. I watched that whole process being built, and then one day I went running through there, and they had encroachments. I meant trees and palms to the road. I meant all the way out.
But but 42nd Avenue, both sides of the street, there are encroachments. It's not only that house.
I'm just saying that that was one of the, we would call it a new encroachment. You
know? Well, that property had some vegetation and shrubbery there before that renovation. Mm-hmm. So there's a question about, you know, did it went back to what it was there before? You know, I don't think that they produced an encroachment permit. We've indicated that would be the process, and you know, if the city is going to pursue this, then we just have to be consistent, and we can't just pick, you know, the ugly encroachments or ignore the pretty encroachments, and that will generate some backlash. And I think that in the past, when the city council has been tasked, or you know, have been discussing this and establishing a policy across the board to move forward, I think, you know, their concern has been the pushback from the community on that. You know, I've always had this street here for 20 years, but it's an encroachment, and it doesn't have there's no encroachment permit, and SADOT won't grant an encroachment permit. So I think from the staff's perspective, we need some guidance about what council is going to support. You know, do we go out and start issuing citations every single day to every encroachment? You can see the list there. Or do we, I mean, SADOT, it's not going to come in and remove them. They're just not. Mm-hmm. And I know I recall the last time that the city was going through this whole conversation, it was when we were segregating and the designating areas for public parking. And I don't know if after that we started seeing a lot more encroachments, really nice vegetation and shrubs and flowers and all that. But they are all over the island.
Mm-hmm. Has something happened to get this on our agenda today, or is this just kind of been an ongoing conversation?
It's an ongoing conversation, and every now and then we get complaints from folks who say, you know, I've noticed this is a huge encroachment on the right-of-way. What is the city doing about it? So there are particular properties that sort of, you know, pop up and become very visible and generate some interest. And I think that some folks get frustrated that the city is not doing more with removing that. But for example, 42nd Avenue, that whole street has encroachments on the right of way. So we can't really just pick, enforce one, you know, and not the other.
Okay.
And Chief, do you want to?
I think the biggest thing I would say is the police department was operating on this. If it's older, we're not enforcing it. If it's newer, it is. And we can't. The one thing about law enforcement is we're, as frequently as possible, we are black and white. It's either a violation or it's not a violation, and we have to treat everything in that manner. So, you know, if we're drawing a hard line in the sand and saying that we're enforcing them, then we're enforcing them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something we would need the guidance from council.
Do you guys have any
discussion? I don't have anything. I don't.
Here's
it's a huge problem.
It's
been around.
It is, and I mean, it is a problem, and I think just ignoring it's not going to be the issue. I think there needs to be a way that we start tackling some of these issues, whether it's by block or whether it's by, you know, the most egregious, or some of them probably have historic, value. I mean, obviously, the growth of a tree that you can tell it's been there forever. Obviously, those types of things we're going to have to, you know, work around, but
what would you think about presenting this to full council?
Yeah, I mean, I will in the report. Yeah, and we'll talk about it and work with, you know, find ways to, you know, not keep kicking this down the road. But like I said, I mean, temporary impediments become permanent impediments, and it's basically it's taking of property that doesn't belong to them and utilize it for themselves.
If I could just add, kind of having dealt with them over the years. The things that a lot of things create even more confusion than there would normally be. One is this idea that existing encroachments are okay. And then if that's kind of the policy and then somebody repairs their fence, mm-hmm. that's in the right of way. Are we saying that's, right. is that new? Is that existing? Where does that fall in the policy of existing is okay? The other thing, and I think Craig Thompson would be good to talk to in terms of the staff time, the, our current mm-hmm. policy mm-hmm. of if we are going to go through, you know, somebody puts a few boards out there, mm-hmm. You know, as it stands now, generally I will kind of get the property line situated for the police department mm-hmm. and say, okay, this, you know, I've measured it, I've pulled their surveys, it is in the right of way, we think the right of way is about here. It then would take a letter writing campaign from Craig, it would take, you know, sometimes it takes months of kind of working together. And then ultimately at the end of the road, if they thumb their nose at it, it ends up being a $5 ticket or a $10 ticket that then would go to the court. And these people are all, you know, they're looking at their neighbor. They're saying, oh, well, I'm going to hire an attorney. So now you're getting into jury trials and you're getting into, you know, huge protracted fights over time, you know, being spent by the staff on each little encroachment. So that's, having dealt with it, that's always a problem. I mean, the size of the encroachment versus the effort to get that encroachment removed, it's just a tremendous uphill battle. I have always felt like if the city were to really want to be serious about it, we would adopt a policy of just removing, that we would... much like the debris on the beach, mm-hmm. you mark it if it's out overnight, you know, so we would give the people notice, hey, this thing's in the right of way, here's your line, here's your surveys, mm-hmm. You have 10 days to get it out. If in 10 days they don't get it out, Donnie's Caterpillar goes and just pulls it away. And I think, you know, we would need to get legal advice on that, mm-hmm. but that's part of the thing is that... It right. is on public property. I right. can't see how the legal advice would say, no, they have a right to put it there, because I don't think they do. Okay. again, we would want clarity on what the policy should be if it's something existing. I mean, do you want us to allow, right. or do you want us, if there's a tree there, they put a new tree, do we get the caterpillar out and rip the tree out and remove it?
But the question I have is, how do you define new?
Right.
And who's going to be out there patrolling to, you know, have this daily inventory of what's been there and what's not? So that's that's the concern and the issue with, mm-hmm. you know, saying, well, any encroachments that have been here prior to 2000 or, you know, 2020, then we're going to leave them. And then if we do go out and pursue a new encroachment really aggressively, then that's going to be up for
right.
discussion. Well, why are you not, just because they did it 2 years before I did, they're okay. So, you know, that's where we get into this hot tamales mm-hmm. situation that we really need to look at and evaluate.
Well, right. And the thing is, I mean, if we're at a point now where we don't do anything,
then they're just going to continue.
Well, what's the use of even having the law, you know, and just, we might as well just say, whatever, and do what you want.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what we want. I think we still need to find ways, and we'll get legal advice. We'll figure out and talk with Craig. Craig?
So he's not doing it anymore.
He's not living with it.
And how they were operating was one thing, but we're being asked to enforce a law.
Mm-hmm.
The law is very specific. It doesn't
right.
give a deadline of if it was there by this point.
Right.
Yeah.
It just says if it's there, it's wrong. And so that's, in the police department, we have to operate by what's written in law. That's
mm-hmm.
it. We can't mm-hmm. really kind of go much from that, deviate from that too much.
Mm-hmm.
Other than we have discretion
mm-hmm.
about whether we write them a ticket or we write them a warning. That's about
mm-hmm.
as
mm-hmm.
much discretion as we do.
And who's that, where's that fine set at? Is that within
state
our
law.
State law?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think the state law talks about removal being an option. You know, I think
it talks about enforcement, so we kind of want to, I want to get more clarity about whether that enforcement includes the actual removal or just the issuing a ticket.
Well, obviously, we're not going to solve it today, but I meant for the next meeting, if we can pull up legal on that, if you guys have any other questions, if we can pull up any other information that we can see what the city can do, what's at our disposal.
Well, that's pretty much it, I will say.
Right, yeah, no, I'm saying, I mean, we're still questioning on the legal aspects of it.
Can I ask just one thing?
Go ahead.
Could you entertain a question from the peanut gallery?
Just a second, Mr. Smiley. Dr. Smiley.
So you, I mean, it feels like the dilapidated structure conversation we just had. I mean, this is exactly the same conversation. This one just happens to be on the books already. So let's say we waved a magic wand and fixed these 12 pages of encroachments. What are we going to do with that property? I mean, what does that do for us? I mean, what's that fixing?
I will say for the beach parking zones, it opens up and provides additional parking. And I think that's why that list was generated through Stantec when the city was developing the beach managed parking plan. But it's mostly that. But the road right-of-way is meant to be there to assist, you know, if particularly on Elm Palm or any of these streets, if there's an emergency and people have to verge off the road so that, you know, that fire apparatus can drive by, then that's the purpose of the road right-of-way. And in a lot of these places, you couldn't safely pull off the road to allow a police or fire vehicle to drive, you know, towards an emergency. So that's really the main, that's the purpose and the biggest issue, I would say, with having these encroachments in the right-of-way.
And it's definitely, there is, by not doing it, you are allowing the creep to happen that does get, you know, it starts as a bush, then it's a fence, and before you know it, you have a concrete post at the edge of the road that a kid will get hurt on. So it's really drawing for the creep that could lead to something pretty substantial out there.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to suspend the rules of order to allow Dr. Smiley to speak to the committee.
Okay. Second? Yep. All in favor?
Aye.
What you got?
It appears to me, and I just saw this resolution for the first time.
Why don't you come sir? Excuse
me, I'll get there. It appears to me, and I just saw this resolution for the first time this morning, that the city has a long-standing policy of not allowing new encroachments and of removing old encroachments. And so the first question is, why is it that city policy is going contra to a resolution that was passed by city council in 2004?
Okay.
Why is the city debating what to do when council has given explicit and direct instructions as to how to treat encroachments?
Okay.
Dr. Smiley, it was not passed.
It was not passed. That resolution was drafted and presented and very similar to the dilapidated.
Excuse me, then we need a new resolution.
That's why I included it there to show this is something that the city has been talking about and trying to address for many years, but ultimately very similar to the dilapidated structures at the end, council decided not to pass it.
What's bothersome to me is that we continue to allow new encroachments. There's probably not a lot that can be done to remove a grand oak tree that's encroaching into the public right-of-way, and we wouldn't want to do that. But new encroachments encourage more new encroachments when we don't do anything about them. And take 42nd Avenue as an example. The fellow, the owner of the property there, knew he was encroaching into the public right-of-way. Douglas brought it to his attention early on, before the encroachment was fully developed. The owner challenged Douglas as to whether he had the right to order him to stop installing palm trees in the public right away. And so this encroachment goes on and on and on, and it's in a, this particular one is in a zone which at some point in the city's history could be an important public right-of-way. We've submitted a grant to the for Urban Greenbelt funds to create a walkover and an observation deck for disabled folks at the beach access path. Well, number 2 42nd Avenue is a good spot for additional handicap parking. We now have one handicap parking space, and we're getting ready to spend $125,000-$150,000 on a walkover for disabled folks to gain access to the beach, and we're going to provide one parking space. We may want that space, and the longer it stays there, the more difficult it is to have it removed. It seems to me that, and for what it's worth, that this idea of not issuing a certificate of occupancy if there are intrusions, especially obstructive intrusions, into the public right-of-way. You know, you can't have a certificate of occupancy as long as you persist in having these things. One last thing and I'll get out of here, and Chief, I'm sorry I've got to say this, but it would be very helpful to the public when the public brings this, brings an encroachment to the city, to keep the person who reported the encroachment informed about what actions are taking. I presented to Douglas, and he told me to go to the police department, mm-hmm. that the building department didn't handle this. So I go to the police department, and I ask first what our policy is. Chief Cornett responded promptly and told me what our policy was, and told me that if I had specific concerns, would I bring them forward? And I did. I reported 3 new encroachments into the public right-of-way. So some days, this is in early December, some days pass and I hear nothing, so I ask the chief, no, excuse me. The chief then reported to me that he had turned this over to the livability officer, and the livability officer would investigate. So I don't hear anything more, and I ask if the livability, I ask in writing if the livability officer had anything to report, and he said no. He's still continuing to investigate. So now it's month of January, most of the month of December, and we're into the month of February, and I don't know what in the world is going on.
Yeah, we will approach that with the chief.
I'll get out of your hair.
No, you're good. We hear your concerns, and I've talked to the chief, and when we go through this process of working through this, we'll try to find ways to make it flow a little bit better. Let's move on to next one. Presentation of 1033 military surplus vehicles. So there's a federal program out there. We never took advantage of it. Where the federal government has surplus inventory of whatever, whether it's cars, equipment, But they will, if you apply for it, they will, the federal government will give it to the municipality at no cost. It's basically no cost for maintenance for up to 3 years. I'll wait for Chief gets going. Basically, all we're doing is paying fuel and insurance and stuff like that. Is it three? It's up to 3 years, Chief?
Or? So we can keep the program or keep the equipment we get on it as long as we're in the program.
Correct.
Some of it, after a certain period of time, will become ours. Okay. After 13 months, what's considered a DMIL Class A will become ours. I know this is tight while we're getting that pulled up, but this will give me a chance to kind of get started. Can you all see this?
Yes.
As good as can be anyways for now. So this kind of lays it out. It's a federal program laid out by federal statute. It went into effect in 1997. It is through a state coordinator, which is housed, they're kind of appointed as part of the governor's administrative staff that they have up there. We have to go through them, and they then go through the federal program in Department of Defense. And then we can go through and access allocation. We can get equipment, we can use equipment, and dispose of federal property through that program. And all it costs our department is $500. It's an annual cost of $500. And then once we pay that $500, we can get a lot of different things. So the big thing, the rules are, it can only be used for law enforcement. There's a separate type program for fire departments. And once we get it, we have to keep it for inventories. That's why the 13-month comes in. We do an annual inventory if we're getting equipment through it. And we have to do one inventory with that equipment on there.
Chief, do you have this on like a USB stick or something?
No, I had it on Office 365, but I'm about done now.
Okay.
So some of the things we can get on here, you can get a backup generator, one of the military-grade backup generators that pull on a trailer behind you. You could get first aid equipment. We could get tourniquets. We could get
cots,
all sorts of things through that first aid. Emergency management necessities, which one of my favorites would be a mobile feeding. So you can get what's called a mobile kitchen trailer, which is a trailer that hooks up to the back of a what we call a deuce and a half in the military. And you pull that thing out, and it just the sides fold down, and you can cook food off of it. And for, say we got hit with a natural disaster, and we need to get out here and feed our troops, we can just pull this out here, drop this out. We can feed all of our staff and everything, and even some of our residents that need food. You can provide a service for them. Training aids, IT equipment. We can even get computers off of this program. We can get ATVs. We can get trucks, Humvees, deuce and halves. So I point out the vehicles. This is Panama Beach, Florida's Humvee that they have. They use it as a recruiting vehicle. Now, I would not, I'm not looking to get one of these types of Humvees. Actually, what will happen when we're done here, there's an example of what we'd be getting outside. And they are more geared towards high water rescue type thing. Because these Humvees, when I was in the military, I was driving one when I finally got an opportunity to, and I kicked my driver out. And my platoon sergeant looked at me, he said, "Sir, you don't know how to drive this, do you?" I said, "I'm driving." He said, "No, sir, move." And then he took me through the woods. We ran over trees and all sorts of things with this thing. It was a great tool to get you where you needed to go. That's your mobile kitchen right there. The sides just drop down, and everything in the middle is used to cook. You've got MREs we can get on it. This is a five-ton. A smaller version of that would be a deuce and a half. Sullivan's Island has two Humvees. They've got a five-ton and a deuce and a half. These are useful for transporting people. If this island flooded and we needed to get to the people on that end, we could drive this through the flooded water, pick people up, and carry them out of the flooded areas. You can get cots for emergency management, ATVs. And the state coordinator told me, he said, "Look, I've got an agency that gets a Humvee that's a truck. The front part is a seat, the back of it's just a truck." He said, "They drive it on the beach, and they don't wash it, they don't do anything, because when they're done and it gets messed up from the salt, they call me, we pick it up, we get them another one." And it's all, they don't really like us to use the terminology of surplus, even though that's what we all call it. But they call it excess. This is Folly Beach's boat, their patrol boat that they have. That came from the 1033. They went and picked it up, and then they painted it. You get the work, all the money that we spend on it would be personnel to pick it up, and then the maintenance to keep it clean or paint it, obviously, because we don't, we're not the military. I would not want to be the military. I've done that already. So what we'd want to do is get it painted so that it matches our community, and we only use it for specific events that would impact our community. That's kind of where we're going with all this. That was a quick
And just as a reminder, a couple of years ago when Sullivan's Island went forward and acquired two high water vehicles, the city did look into that, but the cost was astronomical. Mm-hmm. And so this would allow the city the opportunity to get one, you know, a vehicle like that for emergency purposes, to drive through flooded waters. And there is one that that we have here that we wanted to show you all after the meeting. Maybe it's it was picked up at Fort Bragg. Again, no cost to the city. There's very specific rules. You know, the police department would develop a policy on the use of it. But it's, you know, we're part of this program, and it grants us the flexibility to have access to some of these equipments that could serve the community well in an emergency situation.
Boy, I tell you, that kitchen would have sure come in handy after you got it. Because we were over here stranded for 3 weeks, and it was a real problem. And after the 3 weeks, when people were finally getting back, the Red and White, which is now Harris Teeter, was shut down, and they, Wayne Mosley had a tractor trailer out there that he was selling necessities out of, something else.
But I think
I really appreciate you bringing that to our attention.
Absolutely. And what's neat is it's just $500 a year, and you can get as much of that as you want. And then we hold it here. We have to inventory for every year. You have, I mean, my SWAT team in Columbia, we were outfitted with a SWAT vehicle that way. We were outfitted with SWAT equipment. Now, obviously, we don't have a SWAT team, and I don't want that stuff here, but that just shows you could, if you had an agency, you can get things to fit your agency. And I think we have a need here, being an island that's prone to natural disaster potential. We need to have tools that, should we have an incident
in place
we can respond.
Mm-hmm. And do you mind talking through the whole process? You know, there's a list, and sometimes, you know, we, in order to get something that's really high quality, which is something that we're looking for, we have to react fairly quickly because there is a waiting list, and, you know, everybody who has put in their requests would have the same ability to get that type of equipment. So sometimes it's, you know, a quick response, and that's why we wanted to bring you all up to speed that is something that we're looking into, particularly this vehicle. The quality of it was just something that you hadn't seen.
It is.
It's not often that you see it.
They post these things once a week, and every agency in the United States is on this thing, and you've got to find one quick. And they break them down into condition codes. Typically, what you're finding is condition code F, H, which are your lower ones. The one that we'll have out here today, we found is a condition B, which is good. Mm-hmm. So once you see it, you've got to jump on it quick to be able to get it. And that's for any of these things. That's for the generators, the whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If you find it and it's close, you jump on it quick.
Okay.
So are we in the program at this point? Or
we just started this year, this past year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are we through that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yep.
I'd like to suspend the rules of order and make a motion to suspend the rules of order at this time to consider item F. Is
second.
That your one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're changing the rules, so if we have any questions, we're going to go ahead and if we, we're going to consideration of a request for an exemption from the noise ordinance during the Veterans and First Responders Blessing Ceremony on November 7th. This got brought up last under citizens' comments last month, and we put on the agenda for discussion this month. If anybody has any questions or consideration, Chief, you didn't have any problems with this at all, did you?
No, sir. The only thing that we would want on our end is to make sure that we put a caveat in there that it has to be blanks.
Yes.
It should be.
Obvious.
You got to put it there just in case. I've learned.
Okay. And it is for and I believe it's a 21-gun salute, right?
Yes.
Okay. If anybody have any questions on that? So I'll make a motion that we go ahead and approve this.
Second.
Take it to City Council. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Perfect.
You're
good. I just want to, in case, and you can, well, more than welcome to stay, but I was just trying to get ahead of it. So you were sitting there for this. Consideration of resolution authorizing the consumption of beer and wine at the Front Beach Festival March 7th. As you know, we have to go through and do this for each event now.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any questions? Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
And we've had, I thought for sure we had already adopted this, but consideration of failure to stop on police command ordinance, which is weird. I know we had some discussion at last year on this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if something else
motion
has changed.
Motion to approve.
Second. Yep, anything to say?
Nothing changed. It just, we talked about it, and now I think we move forward with it.
Yes. Crossing T's.
Yeah, we wanted to get legal on it and have her review the suggested mm-hmm. language. And now it's ready for council to look at it for first reading.
Perfect. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Moving back. Discussion of pedestrian crossing on Palm Boulevard in Isle of Palms Connector.
So this will be me. Okay. So when we did our community meetings around the island, community meetings, a resident approached and brought up some concerns about crossing over the IOP connector going towards Harris Teeter from this end, and that while the light gives you the walk, people that are turning still have a green arrow or the ability to turn left, and that it's quite dangerous. And when I sat and watched it, I definitely see the point. They're walking kids across there. So they were asking if it was possible to do what's called an all-stop pedestrian crossing. And I talked to DOT about that, and basically what happens is they hit the crosswalk button. When they hit it, after the light cycles through all the cycles, the last cycle is it stops everybody, gets a red light, and the crosswalk has 41 seconds to cross all the way across. DOT's biggest concern about that is the 41 seconds, because that puts more traffic. Everybody's at a standstill at that point while that happens. But it is, if I'm trying to cross, and I was watching several people as they tried to cross, and even talked with some of our public works guys who crossed that road, it is a quick thing, and it's kind of scary when you're crossing all of a sudden somebody makes that left-hand turn. Technically, the left-hand turn should yield, but it doesn't take away the fact that they're trying to get through there real quick, and it's kind of dangerous.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. 41 seconds.
It was. They initially 40. Responded and said,
why not 42?
Over 30 seconds. And I said, well, how long over 30 seconds? He said, exactly 41 seconds. And I said, all right. Okay, it's a rule.
So I guess it that would only take place when somebody pushes the pedestrian crossing button. Obviously the concern is the summer traffic. You know, that 40-second delay could be significant. But at the end of the day, if it's a safety issue that's been brought up by the community, we felt
And is this in all directions?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, sir. It would. Everybody at that point would get a crosswalk. So regardless where you were coming, you could cross safely.
But right now, in all directions, we have a walk. Don't walk.
We do.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But it depends. I guess with this all stop, this change would move every pedestrian crossing, whether it's
correct.
From 10th to 14th, 13th to 14th, or from any direction would happen mm-hmm. at the same time. And that's why all traffic would be stopped.
But DOT's one caveat with this was that they would want a letter from the city saying that we wouldn't do it because they were concerned about complaints that would come from the city or from the residents sitting in traffic for 41 seconds.
Mm-hmm. So that is why it's on the agenda. A motion recommending this before council.
Motion to present before council.
The all stop pedestrian crossing on Palm and the connector.
Mm-hmm. I'll second it. We'll present this and see what they say. But you said, like, I know I'm sitting like at a red light for a little bit of time. 41 seconds is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll bring it up to council and we'll brief them on it and see what everybody else has to say. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. One no.
Okay.
So make sure I'm clear. The motion was just to present it to council.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
That's
to present
all
to council.
It was.
Yes.
Okay.
Discussion on pedestrian crossing. Update on public safety building relocation process.
All right, a quick update on that. As you all know, trailers have been, or mobile office mobile offices have been installed, delivered, and installed at the parking lot A, which is the public parking lot that's adjacent, right behind the public safety building. We have a triple wide trailer there for police and a double wide trailer to accommodate our fire department folks. We are looking into a full transition of PD and fire department operations starting in March. We are in the process of scheduling contractors to hook up power, water. IT has also been working on connecting the operations from the trailers. We have also secured a storage unit to store equipment temporarily during the construction. Also, lots of signage to make sure that folks know where to go now to find the fire department and the police department, and once they're in that parking lot, where they could safely park. Pretty much it. You know, we're giving ourselves this month to do the water hookups and the power, electrical, IT, everything ready for a seamless transition to the trailers, which will be there for about 10 to 12 months, depending on how construction goes. We've put out information out there through the city's website under latest news, just making sure that folks that have been driving by and seeing those trailers know what they're for. Once we get closer to a hard deadline for that transition, we'll, you know, advertise it and push it out to the community as well, with about 2 or 3 weeks head time ahead of that. But yeah, we're just moving forward. You'll see a lot of activity over there, and we want to make sure that our people are as comfortable as they can. You know, it's obviously an unfortunate situation and not desirable by any means, but I'm just glad that we're moving forward, and this project is going to start next month.
Perfect. Questions? Thank you. We're all looking forward to it. Looking forward to getting it done.
Yes.
Next item on the agenda, you have it in your packet, is consideration of the award for the 4th of July fireworks show from Munderlin Pyrotechnics.
Motion to approve $25,000. Also, do you have 4/2020 fireworks show?
Second.
Just as a background, we issued a request for proposals. That amount pushes our threshold, which requires competitive seal bidding. And did we receive one or two?
No.
We just received one. I mean, this is not something that you know, there's a big
right.
market for.
No.
But you know, we put it out there and received a proposal from Newfoundland, the same folks that have done it for the past 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the way that it works, the way that we've done it is we issue a contract for 2 years and then the option to renew for two or three
mm-hmm.
additional years. That's what we did it the first time. 1 year and then an option to renew for
mm-hmm.
for the next 3 years. And the city did entertain and use those extension options. But now that contract has expired, so we went out for bid again, and there it.
A little better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to hear from both of the chiefs, see if they have any concerns or anything's changed from the past, or your comments at all.
I was real happy with the shooter. I've been assured we'd get the same shooter that we had last year. I get a little nervous when things aren't set up a couple hours in advance, but at the end of the day, we pulled off an amazing show, and it's up to us to make sure that the dunes don't catch on fire, and if they do, we put them out.
Okay. It's going to be a busy day. On a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be packed out here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We will have extra help from Charleston County Rescue and maybe a couple other agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor? Somebody can say an aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Moving on to department reports, Chief Graham.
Here's your short version. This is a draft. Like I said, Botanical Pathway had 99.9% of it done, but I wanted to add one little thing. So we responded to 42 calls in January. 28 of those were resident and 14 were non-resident. 22 were EMS. 18 total resident EMS calls and 8 total non-resident EMS calls. We did have some activity on the water as well, but for the notable events, crews responded to a possible structure fire on Carolina Boulevard and found an electrical fire in a refrigerator. Kind of odd, but nonetheless. The ladder testing was completed. This is an annual requirement for all ground ladders and the aerials. On the 7th, Rescue 1001, which is the rescue truck, it went to the shop for basically the first time. And it was our first experience with this shop. We were very impressed. It's Triple T Freightliner in Somerville. But they were extremely professional, and for having to use them for the first time, I couldn't have been happier. On the 7th, Engineer Faso's Firefighter Boland, they performed the honor guard ceremonies for the new council swearing in. On the 13th, we did donate some of our surplus equipment from the loan closet. It was getting so full that we actually couldn't get in the room. So some of that was donated. We did get a nice letter for it. On the 17th, the Battalion Chief Vehicle called in a structure fire that he witnessed in Mount Pleasant. He was actually able to get into the house and save the dog without any gear on. The homeowners were very happy. On the 26th, the crew responded to a boat fire. This says the Intracoastal Waterway, but the radio tape said behind Goat Island, so I'll have to verify that before I finalize that. We did apply for a $2,000 grant for personal protective equipment. I'm 95% confident we'll get it. And we're actually working on an agility test. Our first run was supposed to be Friday, but they're going to do it today. So we've set up a course. We had one chef volunteer to be the guinea pigs. We're going to improve it, make it better, and then all three shifts will go through it and see where we may be able to improve or possible future operations.
Okay. Is that agility course set up on a like a national standard, or is it something
it you is just set kind of... up for the needs of the Isle of Palms Fire Department? There are some of the okay. things in the national there are some okay. things in the national standards that I would have to say
right.
they don't come they don't
okay. Right.
Not doing it.
Right. Perfect. Okay. Chief?
I don't have a report for you because we have that RMS that's quite difficult to draw stats from you, but I do have some information just to pass on. I know accreditation was a topic when I came on board. Just wanted to let you know that that is a topic that we will discuss in future meetings. Right now I'm going through and pulling a comparison of national accreditation versus state accreditation, and I'll do a report back to you all at another Public Safety Committee meeting on that.
Okay.
Other things... we did apply for or put in for the SMRF grant for the liability reduction, which would reimburse 50% of costs that we incur purchasing things like hiring or purchasing tasers, things that reduce liability. We also at the same time put in for the SMIT grant for 50% reimbursement of ballistic vests up to a certain amount. And then we also submitted for a firehouse grant that would pay 100% towards equipment. Specifically, what we were looking for is an ATV. And the hopes is that maybe that'll tie into that ATV that we had on the budget for next year for the to replace the Bobcat. Other than that, the only other thing I'd say is we had one significant arrest that stood out, and it was a traffic stop for speeding that turned into a DUI and a driving under suspension and 2 pounds of marijuana in the car on that individual. Went to jail. He was a younger individual. And that's it for significance for the month of January.
Perfect.
Thank you. Questions?
Mm-mm. No. And what was interesting in that that Mount Pleasant fire, my friend lives across the street, and they took a picture of it, and they sent it to me, and I looked at it, and went, I go, that's Roger.
You got it.
Yeah.
Great. Because we don't have a copy of the report. And
oh, yeah.
Called me and told me about it. Yeah. And the lady... older than me, most likely, was going to run in and get the dog.
Yeah.
And he said, no, don't do that. I'll take care of it.
Yeah, it was funny. I texted him. I go, are you in Mount Pleasant?
That's great.
So, yeah. There being no other business, next meeting agenda date is March 2nd, 9 a.m. Anybody have any problems with that? Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Favor.
Have a good one. Good day, everyone.